Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today's episode of the NickBot Podcast is brought to you by Hello Windows and Doors. You know, the cold weather is officially here. And if you're inside your home and you're feeling the shiveries, you're just saying brr all the time, what you need to do is talk to your local Pella, Omaha, and Lincoln expert about taking a closer look at your windows. You can save energy and you can stay warm with the windows from Pella that are properly installed, the patented Pella way by professionals using window and doors with the highest energy efficiency ratings in the industry from Energy Star. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the NickBot Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Runza. In basketball, it's all about killer combos. Pick and roll, give and go, pick and pop, Creighton, and a whole bunch of three-point shooters. Combos make life better. And Runza makes it all better with the classic combo that's great during the winter months, chili and cinnamon rolls. The best sweet and spicy combination to hit the Midwest since Greg and Doug McDermott. Here's what you do. You're going to Marcus Zagorowski alley-oop that cinnamon roll with your left hand. You're going to Christian Bishop dunk the cinnamon roll into that homemade chili. And there's nowhere on earth that does it quite like Runza. So get there today. Get your chili and cinnamon roll game right and tell him your friend Nick Baugh sent you. All right, it's Monday, December 28th. Hope everybody had a great, happy and healthy holiday break here with Christmas in the rear view. I wanted to get this guy on the pod, Greg McDermott. Haven't been able to catch up with him, obviously, with the season's kind of been going crazy here for a month. We're about a month into the season, but sometimes it's nice to let a few games play out and then talk to Coach McDermott. Because certainly there's a lot to discuss with his team. You know, they've done a nice job winning some grinder games. They dropped one at home to Marquette. They lost on the road at Kansas for the most part. I've been pretty darn impressed with what we've seen from the Creighton Blue Jays thus far. But there's a lot to talk about with Coach McDermott, just navigating COVID while trying to coach a team. What is he seeing with Marcus Zagorowski? How is it working in a couple of transfers and Alex O'Connell and Antoine Jones? You know, we dive into everything that's been going on in the world of Creighton basketball. So this is really good. You're really going to enjoy this. So without further ado, let's get to it. Here is my podcast conversation with the head basketball coach for the Creighton Blue Jays, Greg McDermott. Well, on the line now is the man, the myth, the legend, Greg McDermott, head coach of the Creighton Blue Jays. Mac, I was so we're taping this on a Monday morning here. Doug and the Pacers off to a pretty good start. They beat Boston last night, and people always ask if you still give him advice. I want to flip it. Like, does he ever watch the Jays and go, "Hey, Dad, like, you guys need to, you're doing this too much. I'd handle ball screens like this." Like, does he ever give you any advice?
What he'll give me is, on occasion he'll say, "Hey, you need to watch the out of bounds play that Milwaukee ran, with 4 minutes left in our game." Or, and once in a while on shooters, he'll say something about, their feet or their balance or something. But he probably listens to me about as much as I listen to him. He's been struggling shooting the basketball, and I'm like, just shoot it, man. Like, let you should not be thinking when you shoot it. Like, and then I gave him a few tips, like, "Hey, how about just, think higher finish, think your feet first, get your lower body engaged." He said, "I can't think about all that in a game." I'm like, "Not in a game, man. Like, when you're doing your workouts, do it. But when you're in a game, you shouldn't be thinking about any of that stuff." But no, Nate's been great for him, yes. The new coach. And, obviously I got a text from a national beat writer last night that said, he looks like the Creighton Doug again. Like, yeah. He's just running around back cutting, curling, popping, doing all, you know, he's got a lot of freedom to move into that offense. And when he moves, it forces the defense to move, and it creates a lot of opportunity. So, you know, short, small sample size so far, three games, but he's really enjoying it.
How much do you, because I always feel like there's a delicate balance of talking to your team about shot thoughts, you know, hey, Mitch, you need to get your elbow in, or hey, Marcus, do this, because that's like a, there's a delicate balance there, because when shooters are at their best, they're kind of like an app, they're just shooting, you know, like I've always felt like, because you can even spill that into the free throw line, there's kind of like a line there of like, you don't want to talk about it too much to where guys are in their own head. How have you kind of approached that with your program in general?
Well, first of all, if I had a dollar for every bit of advice I've gotten on free throw shooting over the course of the last month from our wonderful fan base, I'd have had a heck of a Christmas.
Yes, you would. But,
you know, I think in free throw shooting, you know, if I see something that I think is a little amiss in their form, or where they've got their ball placement or their follow through, or, you know, their balance, like Mitch is a very flat footed free throw shooter.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get him up on his toes a little bit more. But to do that, you can only talk about that in practice. Like, all right, when you're shooting these, you know, 50 free throws, you got to make 45 of them, whatever it is. You know, here's a thought I want you to have, you know, to make sure you're doing. If somebody's struggling, now I don't mess with good shooters very much, hardly ever, unless they ask for it. And oftentimes, you know, for 3-point shooters, most of the time, like a guy like, you know, Doug or Rogge or Mitch or Marcus, or, you know, guys that are elite shooters, like it's their lower body. You know, they're not engaging their lower body. They're not getting their feet and their hips square. And now it's like shooting at a moving target when you're doing that. So, you know, those are things that I'll talk to them about in practice. But the reality of it is, when those guys go to the free throw line, the last thing I want them to think about is the free throw. Like, think of go to a happy place somewhere and think about something else, and then just do what you've been doing your whole life.
Yeah.
You know, just step up there, knock it in. And, you know, we've got some good shooters that aren't shooting it great right now from the line, and I'm hopeful that that'll correct itself over time.
It's free throws are such a weird thing. Like, my high school coach, we had to shoot 50 every day and record them. Coach Self at Kansas, when I tell you, Mac, we never one time worked on free throws in practice. Like, I can't remember a single moment where Coach Self told us to go, hey, get a partner and work on free, not one time. But then Coach Altman, we shot free throws all the time. Like, night before a game, we would go to the old gym and shoot free throws for like 30 to 45 minutes. It's just, it's an inexact science, and there's no right way to kind of quote unquote work on it, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, how often do you, you know, we're both golfers,
yep,
and like, how often do you practice 3-foot putts?
Right.
Like,
right.
You don't ever go out there and like, for 30 minutes, I'm going to roll these 3-footers in.
Right.
Like, it just, you don't do it a lot. And, you know, we, as you know, 'cause you've been at practice, you know, what we'll do a lot is the guys have to make 10 in a row, 12 in a row, 14 in a row, 8 in a row, whatever it is, before they can leave practice. So there's an element of pressure. It's usually after conditioning, so they should be a little bit tired. And, you know, they're reaching the point they want to either get to their shooting workout, or they want to go eat dinner or whatever it is. So there's a little bit of pressure. But, I've had teams. I remember specifically a Wayne State team that was a great shooting team, and we could not make a free throw. And I was a young coach, and I was calling around, and I had 6 different things we were doing on a daily basis to try to to get us out of it. And it just kept snowballing.
Right.
And finally, I told my assistant at the time, like, we are done talking about it. We're not going to practice them. We're not going to do anything. We're just going to let it sort itself out. And fortunately, it did. But it's it's an important part of the game. And it's also different, Nick, like, interestingly enough, you know, we're shooting 66.9% from the free throw line. Our opponents are shooting 66.4. I think the empty arenas have a little bit something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just totally different. Like, you're up there in this huge place and it's empty. And, teams, at least us and the teams we're playing, haven't shot the free throws very good so far.
Well, expand on that for a second, because I wrote that down. How much different, outside of maybe the free throw shooting, how much different have the games felt to you?
I mean, the home games were really difficult.
Yeah.
At first, and just because you're accustomed when you come through that tunnel, all right, here's what it's going to be like. Like, it is going to be rocking start to finish, and now it's basically a closed scrimmage. You know, you hear everything that they say, they everything you say. The referees now hear everything that you say. So it was really, really different. And I, you know, I think it's why you're seeing some, you know, some road teams go into some places and get some wins where normally it would be really, really difficult to do that. So I think that's the biggest thing. You know, the game at Kansas, you and I have talked, it was really refreshing for our guys to play in front of fans. And our game the other night against Xavier, you know, even though it was only 1,500 or 1,600, just to have some people on your side and have a little bit of energy in the building. I mean, that's, you play college basketball to play the games and to compete and all that, but part of it is the game day experience.
Totally.
And that's what's been missing this season, and I'm hopeful as we move forward we can get some of that back.
Real quick, so you made a decision, obviously. So like I said, we're taping this on a Monday. It's the 28th. You made a decision to send the guys home for a few days for the holidays, or give them the option to go home during the holidays. You know, we were texting. It's such a tough spot. I mean, the guys are mentally fried. They haven't seen their family in a long time. There's certainly the risk element of it. But take me into your mind and your staff and you guys, what went into that decision?
Well, initially, Nick, everybody in the Big East was going to keep their guys on campus. And we had kind of made a decision as a league to do that and everybody be prepared to play December 30th. Well, a couple teams had byes on the 30th. And didn't play till January 2nd. So they were going to send their guys home for a few days. And then, you know, Villanova and St. John's made a mutual decision to postpone their December 30th game because they felt their guys needed some family time. So once that happened, it really put me in a difficult position with our players and our parents. And, you know, you're around these guys every day and you see them. And Nick, a lot of these, you know, half of our team hadn't seen any family since middle of August. And you could just see it building and you see things bothering guys that wouldn't normally bother a guy. And you can see some things between teammates that is really rare. And part of it is they can't get away from each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I just felt that while there's a risk, certainly, to send them home, and I understand the risk, but our guys have done a great job, and knock on wood, hopefully it continues, and I trust them, that they really needed a break. They needed to get away from each other. They needed to get away from us. And most importantly, they needed to go see some family and feel like the world is normal, at least for a few days.
Right.
And hopefully that'll help us get through, you know, these dog days of January, February, and early March. But, you know, I think it was the right thing to do. And hopefully we don't get burned because of it.
Speaking purely from a basketball standpoint, what's been the hardest thing day to day as a head basketball coach navigating and dealing with COVID and trying to coach your team? Like, what has it been, what we're talking about, just kind of dealing with the emotional aspect of it? Like, what's been the most challenging part? Because we're about, gosh, a little over a month into this thing now.
Well, I mean, for me personally, you want your guys to have a great experience. And that's part of what being a college athlete is. And obviously there's a lot of responsibilities and roles that you have to fill to hold up your end. But the frustrating part for me is like, I know their life away from basketball stinks compared to what a normal college experience should be. And now they come over into our building and they can't use their lounge. They have to, only a few guys can go in the locker room at a time. We can't do a team meal or a team movie or go play laser tag and, you know, all the things that you would do that would build that team camaraderie, that would get them together off the court. They get to know each other on a different level. You can't do any of that. And as a coach to try to think of ways to make sure your guys are enjoying this experience. That's been the most frustrating thing to me is like, okay, what, there has to be something we're not thinking of that we can do that they'll really enjoy. And, you know, we gave them their rings after the win from last year. And, you know, that was something like, all right, let's surprise them here with this. But, you know, you in your bag of surprises, there aren't any because you can't do anything together. And that's the frustrating part and the hard thing for us. And, you know, we're still wearing masks in practice, trying to protect ourselves the best we can. But it's been a challenge, to say the least. And I'm really proud of our guys you know, for the way they, that they've approached it really from day one.
Where specifically does your coaching change or what you do daily change when you have an experienced group like this one that is pretty accomplished? I mean, hell, you just handed them, you know, Big East Conference champion rings the other day. Like, there can't be much you can tell Mitch Ballack that he hasn't heard 1,000 times from you before. Like, do you focus more on the newcomers? Do you get more into the really specific details? Like, how does that change when you have a group that is so experienced?
Well, I think when they're older, I think you can have conversations with them because they know what to do. And sometimes they may not do it. So, you know, I can approach Mitch, Marcus, and DJ and say, all right, you know, we had six opportunities to dive on the floor for a loose ball in that game, and we didn't do it. So here's the deal. Either we fix it, and I'll let you guys fix it, or we can do dive on the floor drills for 20 minutes for the next 3 days in practice and see how you like that.
Right.
Like, sometimes you have freshmen and sophomores, you have to teach them that skill. Like, when it's there, we're going after it. Like, you're nose first to the ball and hit heads going after the basketball. I think when you have an older team, you can say, come on, guys. Like, I've seen you do this before. You know what has to be done in this situation. Now you have to do it. And so I think you have more conversations like that. And you know, I don't get caught up in it. You know, my staff probably doesn't like this about me. Like, I don't sweat the small stuff. Like, there's things that are going to happen, and there's ebbs and flows to every season. And you just can't panic too much when you have an older team. You just kind of got to let them figure it out. Because if you think back to when we were juniors and seniors, you didn't want to be micromanaged by the coaching
staff.
Right. You put your time in, you've spent the time, you've done the reps. You have a routine that you're doing every day, and you just kind of, in some ways, want your coach to stay out of your way and let you do your thing, put you in a position to be successful, and then let you play. So, you know, I've done that with these guys in particular, and, you know, they know that I trust them, and, you know, we'll talk about things when we're in an individual film session, but other than that, I just want them to be basketball players.
So right now, you guys are coming off back-to-back grinder wins where the offense wasn't necessarily great against UConn and then Xavier. You had to kind of win with toughness and defense. And it really feels like, and maybe you feel different, but it feels like you guys have taken a major step forward in this area over the past year or two. What has allowed for that? Like, how do you get better at winning those types of games? Because that's a hard thing to simulate in practice. You can't say, okay, guys, everybody get in the half court. Let's pretend like we're having a – we can't throw it in the ocean, but we got to defend, and here we go. Like, that's sometimes hard to simulate in practice. How do you get better at that? Because it's important when you get into conference play.
Yeah, and, you know, ironically, Nick, we played four conference games, and the game we played the best offensively, we lost.
Yeah,
Marquette.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, you have to do the other things. And there's things we do in practice where you need three stops in a row or four stops in a row. You know, that builds pressure and really probably elevates your focus because, all right, we've got to get a stop or we're going back to ground zero here and we have to start over. So you talk to your teams about the importance of every possession. And obviously, I think we learned some lessons from the Kansas game in that regard. Like, there were some possessions that, you know, we missed some free throws, whatever. They threw in a bank 3-point shot as the shot clock went down. But we had opportunities and possessions where we came up empty because we got away from who we are on both ends of the floor. And, you know, when you lose a game, I think you even have their attention more where you can really break those situations down and explain them to the guys. So, you know, we've made strides defensively. And, you know, I think this group has been together. And you know, Denzel is he's adapting to the new role as we move forward, but Christian's better defensively. And we've talked before, you know, you got Ryan shot blocking. Christian's a better shot blocker this year. And Christian's one of the best ball screen defenders in the country, in my opinion, because of the different things you can do with him with his length and athletic ability. So we made strides defensively, and it's going to be important in this league because people know each other and they're going to take away some of your go-to plays, and you've got to find other ways to score. And most importantly, you got to find a way to get stops.
You know, Mac, you've obviously coached a lot of guys that are coming back from an injury. I'm not sure in your career if you ever dealt with an injury of some sorts, but you know how it is. Just because you're 100%, quote, medically cleared to play doesn't necessarily mean you're 100% back with your rhythm and your flow and your timing as a basketball player. with Zegarowski, how's he doing right now? Like, where's he at? Because you certainly can tell that he doesn't necessarily, he shows flashes of kind of looking like the guy that was playing at the end of the season last year, but it's been a little bit up and down to this point. Where's he at?
You know, I think mentally, you know, he beats himself up because he's such a perfectionist, and you know, he wants it all back, and he wants it all back right now. And I've been around long enough to watch guys come back. You know, whether you talk about, you know, Martin Krampel coming back from an ACL, and you know, we go down to I think we were in the Caymans.
Yeah.
And you know, Jacob Epperson played much better than Martin that whole tournament. But by January and February, Martin was playing at an all-conference level. You know, it takes time. You don't have your legs back. You don't have your timing back. Your wind isn't back. And you know, I see it getting better every day with Marcus in practice. And it's just a matter of seeing a couple shots go in. But, you know, his assist numbers through nine games this year are actually better than they were last year. He's got a few more turnovers. And his shooting percentages aren't quite as good as they were last year at this time. But, you know, I think those are things that will be fixed because he's a tireless worker. And the reality of it is, Nick, if you think about you as a player and you're in the middle of kind of a slump and you want to get out of it, playing six games in 16 days is not a recipe to get out of that slump. You need like practice time. You need routine time in the gym where that stretch, Marcus was either recovering from a game the night before or taking it easy because we play a game the next day.
Right.
And that happened for 16 straight days. So I think now is a time where we have a little time where he can get his routine back. He can get some recovery work done. And I think he'll come out of it better on the other side. And I've said it before, Nick, I worry about a lot of things and a lot of things keep me awake.
Yeah.
Marcus Zegarowski is not one of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, there'll be a game and you're like, man, Marcus was just okay. And that would be like, I would be showing my film. That would be like my career game, you know? So it's all relative with a guy like Marcus. Like we've created such a high standard for him that like anything below, oh, he was 8 of 10 from the floor. He was 6 of 6 from three. He had 7 assists, 0 turnovers. There's kind of like, Marcus, yeah, he was just okay today.
Yeah, no, he's going to be fine.
Oh, no question.
You know, he can impact the game in so many ways, and that's what's fun for me to see, and why he's so enjoyable to coach is that he's not a one trick pony. That if he doesn't score, he's not helping you win. And I think to the play at UConn at a critical time, getting into the lane and you know throwing the little flip up pass to Christian for a basket that ended up being the game winning basket. Though you know it's those kind of plays when things aren't necessarily going for you perfect. Like you've turned it over a few times, you've missed some shots you normally make, but still have your head right to make the right play when the situation calls for it.
Let's take a quick break to talk to you about my longtime pals and loyal supporters of the podcast, Pella Windows and Doors. You know, Pella has a window type for every home and every budget. And you might know Pella for its award-winning wood windows, but did you know that Pella also has a complete line of industry-leading patented fiberglass and vinyl windows? Pella's fiberglass windows use a patented Duracast material, more durable than aluminum or vinyl, made from a composite material used in the aerospace industry for its strength, durability, and temperature resistance. It's big time right there. And Pella's vinyl window series offer all the features that make it one of the most energy efficient windows on the market with the same value and style you've come to expect from all Pella products, with outstanding structural integrity, built from multi-chambered, fully welded frames and sashes. Pella's vinyl windows assure a quieter, more comfortable home. Bottom line, Pella's vinyl and fiberglass windows are really, really cool. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And while we're here, let's talk about my good friends at Runza. Got another super secret menu item not a lot of people know about. My friends at Runza are hooking me up, and I'm going to let you in on it. This one's just, this one's near and dear to my heart because it's a twist on the best fries on earth. Runza's Crinkle Fries. It's Runza's Chili Cheese Fries. That's some legendary Runza Crinkle Fries topped with their homemade chili and cheddar cheese sauce. Let me say that again in case some of you passed out just thinking about it. Legendary Runza Crinkle Fries. Homemade chili, cheddar cheese sauce. Oh my goodness. It's a side that eats like a meal. So there you go. A another super secret menu item exclusively for Nick Bob Podcast listeners. So stop in, order the chili cheese fries and Runza, and while you're there, I'll tell them Nick Bob sent you. Okay, back to the podcast. You and I talked after, I think it was after the UConn game, and I want you to expand on this, because I said that, you know, obviously you're a very, very well-respected offensive mind and offensive coach, but where I think you are really underrated is in player development with your program. Like, you look back on your time here at Creighton, and it's like every single player takes massive strides when they're in Omaha, and Christian Bishop and Damian Jefferson in particular are two guys that have really taken strides. But you told me that you try to find guys on the front end during recruiting of that want to work and want to get better. Take me inside that a little bit more. Like, how do you go about kind of vetting that and researching that? Because you know how it is. Sometimes you talk to a high school coach and he doesn't want to do his guy wrong, and he'll say, "Oh yeah, he works hard." Or you ask the player, he's like, "Oh yeah, I'm a gym rat." But like, I don't know. You got to dig a little bit. How can you spot that?
Well, you know, you ask a lot of questions, you make a lot of phone calls. But you also, you know, there are guys that, you know, when I remember recruiting Marcus or Mitch, or, you know, keep on going back, you know, Marcus Foster, yeah. You know, right on down the line. And, you know, guys were always, they're always on their way to the gym when you call, or they're coming out of the gym, or they call you an hour later and say, "Coach, I'm sorry, I was in the middle of a workout." You know, like you can tell, and it, you know, guys play on enough teams, high school teams, AU teams, that you can, there, as you ask questions, you're going to get common answers from people. And then the reality of it is, guys that are maybe fringe guys in terms of their work ethic, like they have a good work ethic, but they don't really understand what it is to be great. When they get here and they're around people like that, they get pulled that direction, right? Because they see, "God, darn it, these guys are in the gym all the time. You know, I need to get over there." And then you get over there, and then you see some success and some development because of your work, and then it snowballs. So I think it goes back, you know, all the way back to, you know, Doug, Ethan, Jahans, those guys. Kenny Lawson was in the gym a lot. You know, those guys getting here and working, that when their seniors, the freshmen, take that from them, and then hopefully your program, it's part of your culture then. Right. And, you know, we have guys that get in the gym and work hard and take advantage of this beautiful facility we have. And fortunately it's permeated through our entire program. And some guys are different. Mitch is a 6:30 in the morning, 7 a.m. guy. You know, DJ and Denzel, or Sharif, those guys come in 10:30 at night. That's when they like to come. Some guys like to do it right before practice or after practice. Everybody's a little different, but they all have their routine. And you know, I've also think, Nick, when we talked after the UConn game, I've got a great coaching staff, yeah, as well. You know, the guys that were here before, and, you know, D-Rock and Steve Lutz and Preston, those guys were terrific. And you know, now I've got, you know, Al and Paul and Wrench that just do a terrific job working with the guys and helping them find ways to get better, watching NBA film and pulling them in and have them watch some of their favorite players and then work on that skill and really – you know, really dive in and get better. So, you know, when you have good people around them, it certainly helps them to develop.
A couple more, we're out of here, Coach Mack. Antoine Jones, you know, obviously you see the talent. I mean, his around-the-back pass to Mitch at the end of the first half of the Marquette game is one of the better passes I've seen. He had a great little spurt in the Xavier game and that really was important. But you can also see that he's still finding his way and settling in. What's the most important thing for him to find his way and settle in? Like, take me into your office when you're sitting there with Antoine. Like, what are some things that you're telling him right now?
Well, there's no question. I think anybody that's watched us play knows that Antoine can help us offensively.
Yeah.
It's just defensively, he's generally going in the game for DJ or Denzel, or, you know, two guys that have been around and are pretty good defenders and also really understand our scheme and what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it. So there can't be a huge fall off there. And, you know, number one, it's got to be effort and energy. And I thought he did a great job with that in the Xavier game. And then it's execution, being in the right spot, doing the right thing, knowing when you're supposed to be in help, knowing when you're not supposed to be in help, knowing when you're supposed to switch, when you're not supposed to switch. You know, those are things that kind of come with time. And then offensively, just make simple plays. You know, sometimes, you know, Antoine likes, he's really good with the ball in his hands, but our offense is predicated on ball movement. So we can't have the ball stop every time it hits your hand. Sometimes it needs to be reversed. You need to move it and wait to get it back. So you're attacking a tough closeout rather than attacking an established defense. And those are things that are getting better every day. And, you know, when he played here against us, when he was at Memphis, I think he had 5 or 6 turnovers in that game. And, you know, he's played 152 minutes this year and he's got 7 turnovers. So he's really learned to, you know, here's what I need to do. Here's what's going to be available. I'm going to make the right decision. So, you know, he's going to play an important role in our team, as is Alex, as he gets better and gets more comfortable. But I really like where the bench is coming with Antoine, Alex, Sharif, and Ryan. And then, you know, Jake, if we can keep him healthy, I really like what they can do for us moving forward.
Yeah. Talk about Alex O'Connell a little bit more, because it's obviously challenging when, you know, the team's played, 6 or 7 games, and then all of a sudden you're inserted into the lineup. And I'd have to imagine he was kind of in a redshirt mindset, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're playing with the rule that came down. Where is he at in terms of his acclimation process? And what tell all the Blue Jay fans, like, where he can help you guys on the court the most?
Well, I think I'll answer the last part of that question first. I think people have seen with some of the rebounds he's gone to get, you know, it's a different level than what we have. You know, he can go snatch one up above the rim, and we need some help from a rebounding standpoint in that guard court. And I think he can give that immediately. Obviously, his ability to attack the basket, you can see his intermediate game's really good. He's only taken 3 threes and he's missed them, but he's going to be a very capable 3-point shooter as well. And then defensively, it's just going to take him some time to learn our system. You know, Duke got out and denied and stretch the defense out. We don't play that way, so we've got to reprogram him in that regard. But, you know, again, Nick, last year, Denzel knew when he was going to be eligible. We knew when he was going to be eligible. We could plan for it. Everybody knew it was coming, and this one kind of just hit us from outer space.
Right.
And in the middle of that 6 games in 16 days, so you didn't have a lot of time to really get him integrated into what we're doing. But he's getting better every game. And, you know, I think it's going to be important that we get some of our top players off the floor some, or they're not playing 34, 35, 36 minutes a game. Can we get that down to, you know, 30, 31, 32? And what that does for us over the course of a game and the course of the season, I think could be really huge. So I'm really excited about our depth. And, you know, and the other thing is, Nick, let's be honest. What if you lose a guy? And, right, you know, with what we're right dealing with the virus, we're trying to keep guys away from each other. And if we were to have a positive case, you know, that depth allows you to maybe move on and continue to play games.
I tell you what, though, it's just so good to see Jacob Epperson out on the floor. I can remember talking to you maybe the day after he had the leg fracture last October. I mean, I tell people it was so bad that you guys couldn't practice the next day. Like, it was, everybody was so devastated from it that it really shook up the entire team. Correct me if I'm wrong, like, it wasn't necessarily a certainty that we were ever going to get him back on the floor, right? Or, like, what? Like, it's just amazing to see him out there.
Yeah, I mean, that was a traumatic deal for all of us. Obviously, Jacob, number one, but everybody that was there and witnessed it, it was a tough deal, and you're correct. We were 20 minutes into practice. We didn't practice that day, nor did we practice the following day. But, you know, ironically, that it isn't the surgically repaired knee from a year ago that's bothering him. It's the other one. And that's why, you know, it's there's been some slow going here. And it's he's very limited in the time that he can practice. And because he can't practice a lot, obviously, he's pretty rusty when he gets in the game. But just having him available every day and around the team and feeling like he's part of it has been awesome. And you know, I think there'll be hopefully he can stay healthy enough where we can continue to use him down the stretch. And it's, you know, it's going to be a process with what he's been through. But it's awesome to have him back. And he's just a terrific young man.
Last thing, we're out of here. Most important thing your team needs to tighten up now that calendar is going to turn to January. We're going to get knee deep into conference play. What's the thing that rises to the top of the to-do list?
Well, you know, I think, Nick, and you may think I'm crazy for saying this, but, you know, pace has been a big part of what we do. And I think we've lost it a little. And I think part of it is that, you know, we were disrupted in late November and it cost us some practice time and cost some guys some serious time. And then you jump back in when we start with the, you know, December 8th or whatever it was with the Kansas game, those six games in 16 days, there wasn't a lot of practice time. So as a result, you know, I think we've lost our pace and we have to get that back. And, you know, it starts with a quick outlet or a quick inbound and the point guard doing his job and really pushing it and flattening out the defense with sprinting to the corners and getting our first big down there. So that's really going to be a focus here the next 3 days in practice, is to try to get that back, because I think that's so important as you move through conference play. Is that, can you steal 6 or 8 points over the course of the game because of your pace? And, you know, we've got to get that back, and that'll be a big focus here moving forward.
Greg McDermott, awesome stuff as always. I don't know, you know, they're sending me to Charlotte to do, I got a couple of Blue Jays games, but I don't even know if we'll be able to talk to each other via headset like we have on the radio. I'll have to just keep your phone on you. I'll have to give you a call, and we'll have to just catch up here over the course of the next month, you know.
I always need your knowledge, Nick. Have a safe trip, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Coach Mac. All right. My thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Runza. Best fries on the planet. Great burgers. Cheese Runza. Delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better.
A Huda Media Production.